Hello, everybody, and welcome to Miami Town Ghost Talk. I'm Mike.
And this is Jeff.
And we have another exciting episode lined up for you tonight. We are going to be talking to Melinda and Nick from SOAR. I think Melinda is the founder and Nick is the tech manager. And we'll be hearing all about their stories, and I think they have some pretty cool equipment experiments they've done and various things like that. They're a local Cincinnati investigation group. Are they Cincinnati?
They're like Claremont County. I think they're based in New Richmond. I think they might actually do a ghost tour over there in New Richmond, at least during the ghost season. I'm not sure. I haven't actually seen anything about the ghost tours, but I know that when I was talking to them at the TSP breast cancer fundraiser, they were talking about something about some sort of tour in New Richmond, which is just on the east side of Cincinnati, just east of 275 in Claremont County.
The tours do sound familiar. I'll have to ask about those. We like those tours.
We do. They're very good.
Uh-huh.
Everyone should go to every ghost tour in the city.
Yes,
several times, and tip well.
Indeed, I completely agree. But yeah, we've met SOAR several times at the various conventions around here.
And I know I say this, and I don't know if you think I'm joking or what, but SOAR is one of my favorite ghost hunting groups that I've run into. And I'm not just saying that because they're out in the chat room right now and listening, and they're going to be on the show later, but really, whenever I run into the people from SOAR, they're always so nice. They're always so, I don't know, respectful, and they just seem like I don't know. I think they are my favorite group out there. I know I'm part of a group, and I need to exclude them from the group, but or from the contest of the best group. But from what I've seen of SOAR, I really like them. I think they're my favorite group out there. And I don't know how to explain it. They just seem like they know how to make you like them. And they seem to know what they're doing. At the same time, they're not in any way pretentious. They're not in any way disrespectful. And I'm not saying the other groups out there are or anything like that. Like, I love all the other groups. It's just I really like SOAR.
SOAR is very approachable. They're very easy to talk to. They're laid back. They know what they're doing. They're friendly. I can see exactly where you're coming from. I'm not going to say they're my favorite group just because there are other groups out there that might listen and then I just sound like a jerk, but...
So you're saying I sounded like a jerk. I'm just saying that from the ones that I have run into and the ones who have sold me little stuffed ghosts, they're the best.
I mean, they are probably in the top three that if I was asked to, like, join along on an investigation or something like that, I wouldn't hesitate to try to make it, and that I would respect evidence shown from them and whatnot. I'll give you that.
So what makes a good ghost hunting group? Well, what do you look for when you see these ghost hunting groups? What makes you like a group and what makes you dislike a group?
Well, talking from within the field, it has a lot to do with respect. Do they have respect for other groups, and do they have respect for their clients? Are they approachable and friendly? I have an echo, so I keep thinking of replying. Another I can't. What do you look for in a ghost hunting group? What?
Did you answer? You kept either breaking up or pausing
I was
and
trying to, and then, like I said, respectful and all that. Did you hear any of that?
I did hear all of that, but it was like
Yeah, that's
respectful and
good.
then a pause, and I'm just echoing here and something like that. And
Yeah, that's pretty much all I said because I couldn't talk through the echo, but it stopped echoing.
okay, that's excellent.
So, approachableness is another one. If they're approachable and friendly and easy to talk to, and if they seem knowledgeable, seem to know what they're talking about.
I don't know for me. It's kind of hard to say. It's a lot. I think a lot of it has to do with, I guess, how. I don't know. It's hard to say because I haven't seen how a lot of groups go out and actually investigate. All for the local groups, I've seen just how they present themselves at the conventions and things, except for. Say TSP, CRAPS, and NKYPS, and of course CAPR, and I've seen how they investigate, and that all work. I'm not saying that that's bad at all. They're all very organized. They all seem to know what they're doing, but I think there's something to be said for those I don't know those groups out there who just have that sense that I guess no other groups are threatening them in any way. Like they're really, really willing to work with these other groups and to let the other groups tell them what their own methods are and how they and then instead of thinking that someone else is trying to tell them what to do, just kind of incorporate that into their own. And I'm not saying this about any specific group because I don't know how any specific group would do that, but I think that's, I don't know, maybe the way that it should be done, and I guess a way that a lot of groups in a small geographic area can be a good thing because they can all learn from one another. Did I avoid the question or did I kind of answer it?
I think you answered it. And I think a lot of what you said all plays into respect. I think a lot of looking for a group is what do you think of the people? Do you feel like you can trust them? Do you feel like they are, well, I guess that's it. Do you feel like you can trust them? And are they approachable enough where you feel comfortable with them? Is
Well,
whether or
not
what they're doing
necessarily,
or they know until they do it.
not necessarily even approachable enough, but do you feel like right when you meet these people, can I trust these people? And I have run into groups where no, I don't trust them. I don't trust them one bit.
Right. I think trust is the biggest issue, especially for clients looking for a ghost hunting group to investigate their house. They need to feel like they can trust them right off the bat because they're not going to know them any better than just what they found on the internet when they found them or wherever they found them. Unlike people in the paranormal field who may know a little bit more about them because of what we do in the field and networking and whatever. So that's my take on the whole thing.
I agree, and you can't really argue with those points. You can't say no, it's not good to be trustworthy. It's not good to be like those are all points, but it's like that's the thing to really look for. And too many people from the outside, in my mind, they look for, oh, what kind of evidence have they caught? Oh, this guy caught great evidence here and great evidence here, and really that's more on the maybe not trusting him so much side than the other thing. Like you have this wonderful picture of this ghost, then maybe you kind of second guess it. So really, you're not looking for the evidence that they've captured. You're looking more for their philosophy and how trustworthy they really seem. And just when you meet them, how nice they seem.
Right. I completely agree. That's all I'll say about that.
That's all you have to say about that.
We have a... Well, actually, we don't really. We have one event coming up, but it's not a public event, so I'm not sure it's worth mentioning.
You keep trying to mention it, and I keep saying don't mention it.
Yeah, well, I just mentioned it.
Because no
still,
one's invited. Eric. Yeah. But now you got to tell them what it is, because now they're going to wonder.
You're going to be at the Joy Church. That's what I know. On the... It would help if I knew the information before I talk about it, wouldn't it? On April 11th at 1 o'clock. It is open to the church members only, is my understanding. So probably no one out there listening is invited. But we're going to be giving a presentation there, and it's always exciting to give presentations. So I like to talk about them because it makes me feel good.
Okay, that's excellent.
And there's another one. This one is a public event. May 15th is the Paranormal Awareness Charity event. That is for, it's charity for a girl named, I think it's named Katie, who has, oh crap, now I look really bad that I forget the name. She has leukemia, that's it. So they're helping raise money for her. It's basically a paranormal convention. We will be there. We will be there, and KYPS will be there. Tri-State Paranormal will be there. It's hosted by OVPRI, and I'm sure I'm missing people, but there'll be a lot of cool groups there, and it should be a good time. It's in Portsmouth, Ohio, from 11 to 7.
Where's Portsmouth, Ohio?
I think it's 2 hours northeast of us. Kind of like across, maybe even 3 hours, like east of Columbus type of area.
What would a port, or how would a city get the name of Portsmouth in mid-eastern Ohio?
There's I don't water know. I'll ask a resident when we get there. I have no idea why it's called Portsmouth.
So we're not going to end up on Lake Erie, are we? When you said it.
No. I know it's only 3 hours. Lake Erie is a lot more than 3 hours.
Not a lot
more. I map-busted it. I know it's somewhere over there.
I see.
Well, I don't know the location. I just know it's 3 hours. I can't say I know the location, but I think it's north. Wait a minute. I'm confused here. Northeast. Did I say west?
No, you said east.
Okay, good. Northeast, yes.
But I think we're getting boring.
We're talking about an event. Trying to figure out where it is, and I'm too ignorant to talk about the event because I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, it was funny while you first started talking about not knowing where Portsmouth was, but
Journey says it's down south on the river.
See, that would make sense. On the river.
It does.
Actually, I'm looking at my paranormal map right now, and it's southwest from us. It's nowhere near Columbus.
I was way off. I apologize. Like I said, I had no idea what I was talking about. You're asking me for directions.
But you looked at a map.
From a distance.
Or
the map.
Near Shawnee,
the map. Just looked at the time it takes to get there.
It's close to the one of the southernmost points of Ohio.
I didn't look at the map. I just looked at the estimated time of arrival.
Okay. I see. Well, we've killed those first 15 minutes, so you want to do commercials and then get our guest on here?
I would love to do that.
Oh, we
before are any we dumber I'm talking.
Are we going to do a contest?
Is it good enough?
It kind of sucks.
Then I would say no. That's my opinion.
How about we ask like a paranormal history question? and then just one that we're curious about.
Do you have a question?
I didn't when I said it, but I think I'm coming up with something.
Well, if you can come up with something in the next minute, I would say, okay, let's do it.
Okay, who was the very first person or the very first group to use a K2 meter to search for ghosts?
Do you know the correct answer to this?
I do not.
So how do we know?
But I'm interested. So anybody who comes up with a feasible answer, we'll give them a free commercial. And then anybody who comes up with an infeasible answer, give them a free commercial. We got lots of commercial time.
Yeah.
So let's go to commercial. We're losing guest time. You've been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk. Stay tuned
on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
And stay tuned after this for SOAR, Southern Ohio Apparition Research. Am I right?
Yes. Maybe researchers. Yes,
that,
you're right.
Would have been my second guess.
I don't know. I should have just stuck with yes and made us look like we knew what we were talking about.
Okay, let's
go. We'll be back.
Okay. I wasn't ready, I'm sorry. Here we go.
Every Saturday night on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network, Paratrinity Radio, your hosts Mike and Ellie delve into the controversial subject of religion versus the paranormal. Tune in Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred, on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
This is Web Guy, and you are listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the one and only ASPRN All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Here's an EVP for you.
Join the crew from NKYPS for Paranormal Outreach Radio every Wednesday night at 9:30 Eastern, kicking off the Paranormal Powerhouse lineup. Mike, Matt, and Crystal turning up the heat with a variety of guests from the paranormal community. There'll be fun, laughter, and a bit of information dealing with the paranormal issues. Join us every Wednesday night at 9:30 Eastern on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, this is Shannon Sylvia from Ghost Hunters International and now the new Shantown Show on Para X Vision. And you're listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk. Enjoy the show, guys.
And we're back. Are we back?
We are back.
All right, we are back. So, do you know what the EVP on Web Guys commercial said?
I do.
What did it say? I couldn't hear it, or I heard it, but I didn't have any idea what it said.
Well, then you'll have to tune in next week.
Oh. It's not fair.
Okay. Who should I try to call first? Melinda or Nick? It's too late. It's Melinda.
All right. I was going to say pick your favorite, but it was too late.
I did not pick my favorite. I'll
say hi while you call Nick in.
This is Melinda.
Hello, this is Mike. We're on Miami Town Ghost Talk. How are you today?
I'm great. How you doing, Mike?
We're doing all right. Jeff's here trying to get Nick on the phone. I think it's going to ring in just a moment.
I'm working on it. Here we go.
I'm sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed, or the number has been disconnected. Please check the number and dial again.
That didn't go well at all, did it?
I'm sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed, or the number has been disconnected. Please check the number and dial again.
Number.
You gave me the number.
Maybe there is. I was dyslexic.
But that did add some humor to the whole calling.
That So you two can go ahead and begin, and I'll get you the number as soon as I find it.
All right. So, Melinda, tell us a little bit about how you got started in the whole paranormal field and how SOAR came about.
Okay, well, I actually had my first paranormal experience when I was about 16 years old. I actually lived on my own and lived with some individuals who practiced black magic. And so we had some entities that lived in the house with us and would hide my stuff, move my things around, and actually got a little scary there. So that kind of sparked my interest in it. And over the years, I've just studied different topics from ghosts, paranormal, UFOs, to even, you know, types of divine types of magic, like using tarot cards and those kind of things. So I've just been interested in it pretty much since I was 16. Plus, my family are gypsies. They've done palm reading for years and reading tarot cards and those kind of things. So,
where does your real interest lie? Is it more in the tarot cards and things like that, and the mystic and black magic, things like that, or is it more in paranormal and science and things like that?
It's definitely more in paranormal and science. I can say that growing up with those types of things and being there around them, I see the danger in them, and so therefore I'm not an advocate of such things. But I am knowledgeable about it, so...
So, being knowledgeable about it, like, tell us a little bit about black magic and tarot card reading. Is this something that someone who knows nothing about it should stay away from, or is this like you hear so many things when you're talking about Ouija boards and tarot cards and things like that? You shouldn't mess with those things unless you know what you're doing. Is this something that you found to be true, or?
Most definitely. I've always found that when people mess with things they don't know about, typically they will draw upon negative forces or evil forces to help them, whether it's with the tarot cards or with the Ouija boards. And they're more of like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Almost like a funnel for the spirit, and therefore the spirit would have to almost enter them to do these things. So it's definitely something that people should not mess with. I've known too many people that have and then end up having negative entities in their house or attached to them or following them around.
So these negative entities, like, this is something that I always like to bring up in the shows. Like, I'm one of those people who go out there and I really want to find a ghost, no matter what kind of ghost this is. And I would kind of like my house to be haunted. And whenever I say that, people say, well, you don't want any of those demons or dark entities or evil entities in your house. Well, I'm still thinking that, yeah, I kind of would, because that'd be kind of cool to capture that kind of evidence and have that. Tell me how I'm wrong here. What's this going to do to me?
Well, typically when we have cases of people who've done those sort of things, they usually come to us in the aftermath and they want to know, you know, what can I do to get rid of it? And they've usually, you know, called the Ouija board by themselves or used tarot cards or had seances. And I usually tell them that you do not know what you're going to be messing with when you use some type of device like that. So therefore, you won't know if it's a good ghost, a bad ghost, and the repercussions of it are going to be worse in the long term.
I just messaged you the number, Jeff, to your Skype.
I got it. I'm working on it right now. So what's the worst thing that you've ever seen a ghost do to someone?
I actually had a case where they were using a Ouija board in the house, and we had investigated one time and just got a few EVPs. The next time they called us back because they woke up and their bed sheets were shredded like by a claw.
Hello. And some precautions that are going to be worked.
Hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick.
Hi. Hello.
Sorry about that. I was given bad information about the phone number. Welcome.
Oh, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe not. Okay.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Melinda. Go ahead.
That's fine. Like I said, we had a client where their sheets were actually ripped, and they also had a scratch mark on their back. And they said that there was a shadow man that would come to the doorway and peer into the doorway at nighttime. We ended up having to get a blessing done in that home for the entity to actually leave. As for right now, every time I talk to the client, everything's fine. But, I mean, it did actually, you know, it scratched them, tore up their bed. So that's probably one of the worst things that physically have ever happened to someone.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is just, as a ghost hunter yourself, as someone who goes out there looking for these entities, isn't something like scratches on your back or things getting thrown around your house?
For myself?
Yeah.
I've never had anything really harm me. I mean, I've been touched. I've felt some energy before. I'm sensitive to EMF, but I've actually not had anything harm me.
But wouldn't that be something that would excite you as a ghost hunter, that this is actually happening? Like, I'm actually firsthand getting a physical experience here?
It probably would, because most of the time, you know, nothing ever happens.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And I guess this is just what I'm trying to say, is like, everybody says when I say I want my house to be haunted, I would really like a ghost in my house, and people say, well, be careful what you say, you're gonna get in trouble there. And yeah, maybe after a year of being constantly kept up all night by these terrible ghosts that scratch me and mess up my bed, I may change my mind, but at this point I think that would be really cool.
Well, I lived in a place where there was one at one time, and I mean, it wasn't comfortable, but I was young at the time, so, you know, now it's a little bit different. I don't know if I'd want one in my house.
So Nick, were you saying something?
I'm just asking the question. I'm asking, to what extent, I mean, what are we willing, how far are we willing to go to make that happen?
Well,
that's the question.
Like, what exactly do you mean? Like, I'm perfectly willing for anybody to do their best to come over here and haunt my house. But I think the question you're asking though is how far are we willing to go to get some evidence to actually experience this ghostly phenomenon, and then therefore get a better understanding of what this is.
Right, and forgive me if I missed your question to Melinda, but I mean, are we willing to do what the extreme paranormal guys do on TVs when they're actually doing blood rituals and calling up, you know, the Tree of Life and this, that, and the other? I mean, are you willing to do that? I mean, is that what we want to do to make things happen?
I don't know about that. There's something that seems almost sacrilegious or wrong.
Disrespectful.
Yeah, disrespectful. That's a better word. There's something that seems disrespectful about something like that, but if it's just coming into your house and saying, any ghosts who want to, come on into my house, haunt it, do whatever you want, I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, you don't, or I don't think I'm willing to do something like that, and I'm not sure that, like, blood rituals and things like that are necessarily disrespectful, but I don't know, something, I'm not sure exactly what I'm trying to say, I guess.
I understand.
So Nick, tell us how you got started in the whole paranormal field.
Gosh, it goes way back to my early childhood. I mean, paranormal for me means exactly that, anything in the realm of paranormal, not just apparition studies or anything else. But so, I mean, for me, it goes back to discovering early on that we humans have abilities that we don't quite understand. And, I mean, that was entering my brain as early as age 5, 4, maybe even 4 years old. And, meaning I had a personal experience, not one related to apparitions, but something more to superhuman strength. And it's from that point on that I was always curious about what talents, like talents that humans possess, and what the repercussions of those talents can be, and then of course what the confusion can be for those talents, and the confusion being that, you know, we walk into a haunted place and our first line of questioning is to figure out if we're dealing with a haunted place or a haunted person, as we refer to it. And haunted person meaning that the person that's standing in front of us, although all very well living and standing there breathing and talking to us, might have a very haunted inside psychological problems or something. That they may not be psychological problems, but they certainly are inner talents they may not be aware of. And so I refer to them as haunted people versus haunted places.
So what exactly is a ghost in your mind, Nick?
Well, that to me is the ultimate question in ghost studies, of course, meaning that if we're dealing with an energy form, which is the only thing I can surmise that they are, then we're dealing with any energy forms that apparently have the ability to manipulate the energy surrounding them and to use that energy to either create voices on our voice recorders or to move objects or to scratch our backs. So, I mean, that to me is a profound and difficult explanation. I mean, I don't know how to manipulate energy that way. I certainly don't know how to do it from the ether world. But my definition of a ghost is just that, something that's able to manipulate energy from the other side, if you will, in a way that either manifests themselves physically in whatever fashion they choose.
But not necessarily a person who has passed on.
Not necessarily, no. I mean, if you want to believe some of the psychics that do their work, the psychics absolutely make a delineation between past humans and demons and other spiritual beings. So I don't know why the psychics make that determination, a delineation, but they do. So I don't have any psychic ability, so I can't tap into what they're seeing, feeling, or knowing. But they clearly make that delineation when they're assessing a situation to whether it's a demonic being versus a past human being or a light being of some other sort, meaning a more positive being.
How about
why is that?
How about you, Melinda? What's your definition of what a ghost is?
I believe a ghost is several different things, kind of like Nick. One could be past energy, like the residual haunting, as well as could be dead ones that have passed on. And also, it could be a signature of even a human or a person that is living, and their impression is just, so it's almost like a residual, but their impression is still active to this day. Like if you did the same thing over and over again, like move your keys for 5 years in one place and then you don't do it, then is that going to create the energy that's going to cause that, you know, that energy, the fluctuation, those kind of things?
Do you run into a lot of spirits like that, where a lot of, stories or evidence like that, where somebody who does something again and again, the same way in the same place for so long, it leaves some sort of imprint? So if somebody walks there, if somebody for 60 years got up at the same time, went down, ate breakfast, went out the front door, and then at that time, every day after he died, that front door would open or something like that would happen?
Yes. Yes, I would say that. And, you know, that is kind of hard to distinguish whether it's, you know, someone who has passed compared to, you know, it being just residual or, you know, a common or current thing. But I would say that in our studies, we definitely have came across that.
Do you say that's more... Okay, go ahead, Nick.
I'm sorry, let me chime in real quick. To quote another group from television, the Paranormal Research, the Penn State Paranormal Group, you know, they actually had a show once where they theorized that what was happening, and it was in a hotel in New England, I believe, and they actually theorized that there were three hauntings going on, and all three of them were nothing more than folklore, meaning urban legends of the town. That enough people believed it in those urban legends and came into the hotel believing those legends that they actually eventually manifested themselves into actual, if you will, spirit hauntings in the hotel, even though none of the events actually occurred originally. So somehow a collective consciousness and human energy, meaning living human energies and spirit and psychic energy, actually created hauntings within the hotel that never actually originally existed. That makes sense.
That's actually a really cool idea that I'd never heard before, and I really like that idea.
Yeah, it was their case study of the hotel Canoe, C-O-N-N-E-A-U, I think is how it's spelled. So it's a really curious theory on their part. It's the only explanation they could come up with because, I mean, in the three situations, one was there was a bride who had, was on her wedding night or whatever, and she died before getting married, and like a hotel burned up or something, that's struck by lightning. Another one was that a kitchen cook or butcher got stabbed and he was mean or something and came back to haunt everyone and threw knives across the room in the kitchen and stuff. And the third one was a little child on a tricycle had fallen down some stairs on his tricycle and died in the stairwell. And I mean, in one actual video, somebody actually captured what looked like the little boy in the stairwell. And people have seen the doors opening and closing on the third floor where the bride was, and people said they've seen the knives fly across the room. It's like, well, how's all that actually happening? And again, it goes back to I talked about the living humans having talents we don't even know what we have,
right?
And
right.
Collectively, is so anyway.
Exactly. Interesting theory. So, do you find that in what you've either of you in what you've done and your investigations, whatnot, do you find that it's more prevalent that a ghost would or a ghost story would develop when around something like what I was talking about earlier, where somebody did the same thing over and over and over and over and then died, and then those same things kept happening afterwards? Or is it more like a traumatic event happened just the once, and then that repeats again and again? Because that seems to be what I run into more often when I'm looking for ghost stories. It's those traumatic events, it's those murders, it's those suicides, it's the things like that.
I don't think I could break that into percentages.
Would you say one was equally as prevalent as the other? Because I hear every once in a while about one that somebody's done the same thing over and over again, but it just seems that it's much more prevalent in my mind. But most of my research has been about the urban legends, the famous place, the big ghost stories, as opposed to more going into those private residences, those places like that, and experiencing those kind of things.
I mean, I personally think it's more residual type of hauntings that we come across than traumatic incidents. Yeah, exactly.
So what about like in cemeteries? Because I wouldn't think there'd really be residual there. People don't go there very often, walk around.
We always find that, why would someone want to hang around in an old cemetery once they've passed on? And, I mean, we've investigated several of them and really haven't had much luck with them as far as capturing evidence, maybe a few EVPs here and there. But I think it's more when, you know, you have a family in a home and they're active there, and then I feel like it typically will stir the spirits more.
Okay. So what kind of evidence would you say is the best evidence that you've caught? Like, what have you caught a lot of great evidence, or what evidence have you caught that you would consider noteworthy?
Nick, do you want to go after that one?
I'm just going to, well, I mean, it's very, very clear for us. I mean, it's all about EVP work, honestly. I mean, no one has really invented the equipment yet that gives us the clear image that everyone's wanting to see. So, I mean, I've seen one great picture last year, and we were at the, charitable event that we did, when was that, a couple months ago? And the Everyday Paranormal Group from Kentucky had a great image. I mean, it was a really interesting image, but I haven't quite finished analyzing it, but it's, you know, to go year after year and get one image each year, maybe that's interesting, maybe one. It just means that we haven't invented the right equipment yet, which is certainly what we're working on. So in the end, it's really the EVPs that are the only thing that seem to give any real, have any real credence for us. I mean, even images can be analyzed for a long time before we decide they're either real or they're not. Real meaning there's an apparition in the picture or not. So, you know, I mean, how many TV shows have there been and have we really seen anything? I mean, the thermal camera captures stuff, but I mean, that's also very problematic related to reflections and, you know, other kind of other issues with thermal cameras. So, I mean, so after all these years of, and all these TV shows and all these investigators out there, I mean, have we seen anything really real? I can't say that I have. And so in the end, I mean, it seems to come down to EVP work more than anything.
So
but we're not giving up hope, of course.
Well, what's the best piece of evidence that you feel you've ever seen for the existence of the paranormal?
I'll give you that answer. I'll give you my answer, then Melinda can give you hers. My answer is that I can't go to any cocktail party of any sort, and for those who know that I ghost hunt, without someone coming up and telling me their story. So it's inescapable. Everyone has a story. So the best evidence for me is the collective evidence, meaning that everyone seems to have something. Proving it's hard, meaning we haven't, you know, proving it and capturing it and documenting it, that's the hard part. But yet, I can't believe all these people are haunted people versus haunted places. I have to believe there actually are haunted places out there. And so that, to me, is the best evidence of the fact that there's no lack of evidence, there's no lack of stories, anecdotal though they might be, that speak to reality.
Okay.
That's my answer.
How about you, Melinda? And now that
I concur that, with Nick.
Oh, you can't do that.
There's just been this, I mean, there's so many things out there, but you know, you have to go back behind it. Where was the picture taken, or where was the video taken? What kind of lighting? You know, you have to know all the details behind each of the things. And so it's really difficult, actually. You had mentioned previously one of our personal evidence things we've collected. And one that I like was in the Dr. Rogers house in New Richmond. We caught a strange light anomaly, which was similar to like a lightning bolt. So that was a really interesting one, and we couldn't debunk that. But in general, there are so many out there, I don't know which one would be my favorite one.
My favorite story for evidence, I'll give you my favorite story, is Shane from Dark Figure Productions. Do we all know Shane? Is that right, Dylan?
I know Shane, but you might want right. to elaborate okay, so, for those who so, don't.
Right, so there's a couple fellows in town that are in a production team that are taking some historical stories from the county surrounding Cincinnati and are putting them to DVD. And so they've been doing this for a long time, just like Jeff and Mike have been doing with their collecting their stories, going out and capturing, in essence, actually recreating a lot of the urban legends and that sort of thing. But one night Shane was driving down the road with his father in the car. His father was a passenger, and they're going down the road, and forgive me, Mike helped to tell the story better than I do, which road it is, of the Faceless Hitchhiker or the Faceless Man. Which road is that?
That is on 222 outside of Bethel.
22, okay. Right, outside of Bethel. So Shane's actually going down 222 with his father in the car. As they're going down the road, they pass a man on the side of the road. And after they pass, the father turns to Shane. He says, "Wasn't that odd? That man didn't have a face." And Shane's like, "Oh, wait." He's like, "Wait, I mean, he just passed the face." It did not register in his brain that they were just they were on that road with that legend, and that he passed that guy and didn't have his camera ready. So, I mean, it's my favorite story that they actually passed the face. So, I mean, there's a very credible witness. I mean, Shane, of all people. And yet, unfortunately, he didn't capture it. So he saw it, he didn't capture it, and it didn't even register in his brain until his father said something, and then it was too late. So, I don't know. That's my favorite. That's my favorite story about evidence.
Mike and I actually have a story that's kind of similar to that, and I know we've probably told this a million times, so forgive me, the audience, regulars, whatnot. But we were up at Hopewell Cemetery up in Preble County. And on the way there, we had stopped at Beth Israel Cemetery, which is supposedly a hotbed of EVP activity, and we left a digital audio recorder there to record. And we left. We knew that if we caught anything, we wouldn't really be able to prove anything, because anybody could walk up to it and just whisper into it or anything like that. So we got up to Hopewell, and that's way out in the middle of nowhere. Clearly nobody anywhere around us. And we start hearing voices, like clear female voices, and they were laughing, and there was nobody there. And, of course, we had left our digital audio recorder back at Beth Israel, and any evidence that we would have catch there wouldn't have meant anything. But we were there with... and that was one of the stories. You'd hear these voices, and just one of those tragedies where, oh, well...
So speaking of your favorite stories, favorite haunts, someone in the chat room asked me to ask you about Utopia.
Okay.
What is
Utopia?
Yeah.
I believe it was some type of furnace or possibly where they made bricks. I don't think that it was actually a church, because there's many other locations like that around Claremont County and Brown County.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, they're very similar, and they're on people's property. I don't really think that it was a church, so to speak.
So what's the legend behind it? I'm not real familiar with the Utopia legend.
The legend behind Utopia was it was a church, and the spiritualists used to meet there. The guys from Crafts would be great for this one, because they really investigate the details on this. But there was a flood, and I think they said like 135 people got killed, and it's haunted at that location by the people that were killed in the flood. And they say you can actually see them walking down the street as well at night to the Reverend's house, which is pretty close to where the Utopia Church is. We did investigate there, and we actually didn't collect any evidence. The locals... they really harassed us while we were there, so we didn't get a lot of investigation time in.
Like, how did they harass you? Like,
They were running around out by making noises, scary noises. They were throwing pop cans down at us. I think it was a big joke for them.
That's always tragic. If say astronomers were out looking at the sky, there wouldn't be people going around making scary noises and throwing pop cans at the astronomers. So it's just because we're not officially a legitimate science, it's like it's a joke, and it's just tragic.
Yeah, I was very disappointed that evening. I mean, because it's a long haul down the ladder, and you have to like rope your equipment down to get down there, and just all the things that were going on. And so I don't know, I would say anyone who wants to go out there, you probably should have someone keep guard up top.
We actually investigated it twice.
Just kidding.
We actually investigated it twice, so on the second time around we had a little better luck, meaning the locals weren't so boisterous or rambunctious. And my impression of the place really was that it was a smokehouse, meaning that they smoked meat or grains or stored grains down there. It didn't strike me as a church at all. And I guess the real story about Utopia is also that you have to remember that the Ohio River at that time was much lesser than it is now, and there were actually what they called the three plateaus coming up off of it. And they built the town for some reason on the first plateau near the original river. So the flooding actually, the river is now higher than the first plateau. We actually all kind of coexist on the second and third plateaus. So, I don't know, people drowned and the town was covered up. It was mostly happening down on the first plateau where they built the town. So, I don't know. So maybe the spirits are underwater. I don't know. But maybe, like you say, maybe they do see him walking up the street toward where the church is or where the Reverend's house was, because he did build it a second time. There was a second, the first one got flooded or burned or something, and they built it up on the second, some of it on the second plateau, but even then that all kind of got washed away or something. I forget the whole story, but so, but my question is, it's actually a smokehouse. It's for smoking meat and storing grains.
So is there any historic evidence that there was actually this mass death in this flood? Or is this an like generally accepted as an urban myth?
I've always taken it as truth. Mona, do you know?
Well, what I've heard is that the amount of people that actually died was more like 15 or 20 compared to 135, and it actually happened right on the river, not where the Utopia Church is. That's because some people were in a house, or I believe it was a house that was right on the river at the time when the flood came. So I don't think the amount of people that died is correct.
Okay.
That's what I've heard also.
So tell us, one of my favorite stories from over there in Claremont County is one that you guys actually told me. It absolutely reeks of urban legend, and it's the Pond Run Road story. But it is one of my favorite little stories because it is kind of creepy, and it does sound exactly like one of those urban myths, but it kind of gives a little background to it. Did you want to tell everybody that story?
Pond Run Road, right outside of New Richmond, is supposedly famous for several of the urban legends that have been created. And one story is that there was a boy who was chained to his bed, and his parents left the house, and his house started burning down. So he ended up having to cut his arm off to actually get loose. And so he would be running around in that area, and anyone who would have their car parked would actually hear a scraping down their car at nighttime, as well as that's where the famous story of the hook man came from, that he had a hook on his hand, and people would look down and they'd see the hook hanging on the car after they took off.
Which is one of the first urban legends that I ever heard, and I never really got that depth behind it, I guess, the story behind it. So I kind of think it's cool that right here in Cincinnati there's the kind of story behind it, where there is a kid who was chained to a bed and he had to cut off his hand to get out of the burning house. And I just kind of like that. I think it kind
we
of...
actually did an investigation on Pond Run Road, and we walked the entire road, which is probably a good 2 miles. We went with a police officer, and nothing happened, just to let you know. We didn't see the hook man.
So if you had seen the hook man, would the police officer would have protected you? Or
I would hope so.
Was that the purpose of the police officer, to protect you from any hook men that you might run into?
He was actually in our group at the time.
Oh.
He was a team member, so we just felt extra safe having him with us.
So, I know that you said that you investigated the Dead Man's Curve, where the faceless hitchhiker was. Am I correct in that? And you said Pond Run Road and other, I guess, public places like this. Do you ever run into problems with law enforcement now that you mentioned that, like going out and investigating these public roads in the middle of the night?
We actually we haven't had any problems. We usually ask ahead of time before we go out somewhere, so
like,
no problems.
Who do you ask for that?
Just depends, you know, on the area. You know, we do a lot of stuff in New Richmond. So we talk to New Richmond Police Department, the mayor. She's very familiar with us. You know, and just some of the local townships as well. Let them know we're going to be out there, those kind of things.
Well, that just sounds like something that would be really, really interesting. Like, I know that a lot of people say that when you're outside, it's harder to verify your evidence, to take all those extraneous factors out of what you're capturing. But at the same time, it just seems more open and almost more creepy in that way, that there's so much more room or so much so many places that something could come out of or something like that. So that would be something that I would really like to try to do, to go out and investigate a public place like that.
Well, we welcome you to come out sometime, and we will take you down to Dead Man's Curve. How about that?
I would love to go down to Dead Man's Curve.
But it's going to be like between 1, 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's okay. I can stay up late. I don't have a curfew anymore. We are starting to run a little low on time here, and I'd like to give you a chance to...
I had a question real quick before you do that.
Go ahead.
Hopefully I'm not mistaken here, but as the tech manager, Nick, don't you do a lot of different kind of unique and new experiments with equipment and stuff? Is there any... thing specific that you've done that you could share?
Not yet, meaning that we're still working on new equipment. So okay. The unique, right now we're kind of following the pack. At some point I hope to be ahead of the pack. So the research that I'm working on now has a lot to do with understanding of electromagnetic waves. For me, the concepts, and I'll do this as quick as I can. I mean, the concept is that we have to keep in mind that our brain waves, as we're living, exist in the 1 hertz to 50 hertz range. And the question is, what happens to us when we die? If we die and those brain frequencies continue on somehow, meaning they attach themselves to the energy that surrounds us, and energy surrounds us, as we all know, then is that the hertz range that we should be studying? If it is, then we have to get detectors that go that low. All the detectors we're using in our clubs right now do not go that low. The second thing to keep in mind is that what's odd about EVPs is that they come in at around the 50 hertz range, and we speak above the 50 hertz range typically. I mean, we can talk as low as 20 hertz, but it's fair. The real problem is that we're hearing female voices and male voices down that range, and that doesn't make sense because male voices, bass voice can get real low. A female voice is generally much higher in the 3,000 hertz range. So how can a female voice exist at the lower range around 50 hertz? I guess it's very technical, sorry. But so the real concept for me has a lot to do with the fact that it might be something similar to what we do with radio, meaning actual radio that we listen to on on the radio, our cars and stereos, is that in radio, there's a carrier wave, and then there's the other wave on top of the carrier wave. My real question is, maybe EVPs are coming in as a wave on top of the carrier wave, and the hertz that we're measuring is just the carrier wave, not the actual voice rate, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all these things that we're working on, meaning from a theoretical perspective, and then trying to make detectors that are going to allow us to deal with the hearing voices in a better way, capturing them more consistently. Same could be said for visual effects. So if our peripheral vision is seeing more in the ultraviolet, then and if cats and dogs are seeing more in the ultraviolet, then what do we need to be using for detectors that see better in the ultraviolet? It's different than what our night shots are doing because they're too high up in the spectrum. They're coming into it, but they're not into it in a way that's in the infrared, et cetera, but it's not in a way that we need to be. So it's a whole other ball game to come up with detectors that are going to see in that range. Okay, I'm done. That was it. That's in a nutshell.
Well, I really like that train of thought. Like we were talking a couple weeks ago about how what if paranormal research was like a legitimate science. Like we get these $1 million government grants to actually research this, and this is the kind of stuff that would be at the center of that research, where you actually investigate the scientific things about this, and then you actually go into these locations instead of for 4 hours one night, you actually pay a team to go there and investigate for like a month at a time, and you're more or a year at a time. Like I know there's scientists who go up to the North Pole to study stuff up at the North Pole, or go up to the space station for months and years at a time. And we just need something like that, some push, some, and I think that we could actually find something out there that can help, I guess, give some scientific legitimacy to the field.
Yeah, I think it is possible. I mean, people ask that question a lot. Do you think we'll ever make it into a legitimate science? The answer is, I do think so. I think it's a long haul, but I think we can do it. I mean, the last thought that I have on all that, and something Melinda and I worked on recently, is that if ghosts can really manipulate energy to do things like move objects or make voices, then maybe they can actually manipulate electromagnetic energy in such a way that they can actually produce a video of themselves, in essence. So they can actually produce a visual effect of themselves through electromagnetic energy, which means we have to detect it, we have to capture it, we have to send it through frequency analyzers, and then have it produce the picture. So are they actually that clever? Can they actually do that? We don't know yet, but we're dying to find out. And that's the stuff we're working on. So.
Well, that's really...
You said with the EVPs being able to hear it at a certain frequency. That's something I've always wondered, because that seems like it'd be a real easy way to cut out the whether or not it's stray radio wave frequencies and people in your group and all that other stuff. It's just something I've always been curious. Can you single it out based on the volume of, or the frequency of the voice, the volume?
We do analyze to find out if it's coming in on a certain frequency or not, yes. We send it through frequency analyzers to find out. I mean, there's a lot of things that are happening down in that. Not a lot of things happening down in that range, but there are things happening down there. I mean, the government uses the range between 30 and 42 hertz to do their transmissions for, like, the submarines and other environments, because it travels long distance without interference. So the government's got complete control of the 30 to 42 hertz range. So it's kind of problematic that we're picking up EVPs down in that range as well. Do we think the government operatives are sitting down in their ham radios or their transmitters and talking to us just to pull our legs? I don't think so. but if they're down at that range... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying that they're also throwing soda cans at you. These government operatives. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It was a terrible joke to begin with. And now I've ruined your train of thought.
No, my train of thought's fine, but it's just that meaning that we don't really know what's happening down in that range, and we do send all the recordings through frequency analyzing to find out what exactly we're picking up. So.
Okay, well, we are almost out of time here, so I want to give you guys a chance to plug anything you got coming up or tell us a little bit about your group and say somebody out there needs a ghost hunting group, why would they choose your group? Or actually, we were talking a little earlier before we get into that. Do you guys have a ghost tour over in New Richmond?
We are going to be doing one this summer with Historic New Richmond. We partner with them, so you get a little bit of history and you get a little bit of ghost with it as well. So we'll have that up on our website pretty soon. We're also planning some other ghost hunts that will be in town, and we'll announce them as they come up, different businesses and some of the buildings that we've done. So we're pretty busy. We have tons of stuff going on and lots of investigations. And
the overnighters, too. Don't forget the overnighters.
Right. Yeah, we'll be doing some overnight ghost hunts coming up. So when I find out more information about that, I'll put that on the website.
What's the website?
Some sort of meet and greet every year?
We usually do. This year, I don't know if we're going to do one. We're going to do a Halloween, like the ghost hunting 101 type of thing. But we're actually really, really busy, so I don't know if we're going to actually do the meet and greet this year.
Okay.
Otherwise, we'll see everybody at the Queen City Paranormal Convention, Paracon.
Yes, we'll be at Queen City Paracon April 9th.
I'll be there as a patron, not as a vendor, though.
Mm-hmm.
What was the website? I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt here, but you kept talking about everything will be on your website, and I don't know where that is.
www.soarparanormal.com.
And what came first, the acronym or the name?
The name.
And it just happened to work out to say SOAR?
Yes.
I've always
got. My kids
always...
helped me with that one, believe it or not.
Okay. Well, did you have anything else that you wanted to say before we let you guys go?
Well, thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks for having us. We had a great time.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Like I told everybody before the guests came on, you guys are one of my favorite groups, and I really like running into you whenever I run into you at one of those conventions or one of those places where I do run into you, and I do mean that. So thank you so much for coming on the show, and you were great guests and gave us a lot to think about tonight.
Yeah, definitely. And we want to see you down in New Richmond.
I would love to stop by. So, did you have anything else or?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks again for coming on. Okay. Did we want to go to commercial, Mike?
Yeah, I think we could do that.
Okay, and then we will wrap up for the night.
All right.
So
you've been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Are you experiencing strange noises? Seeing shadows and no one's there? Have an uneasy feeling in your own home? These may be signs of paranormal activity. Cincinnati Area Paranormal Existence Research, CAPER as we're also known as, provides free consultations and investigations. With over 30 years combined experience, CAPER can help you find the answers. For more information, give us a call at 513-407-4242. You are not alone. We can help. To help you learn more about paranormal activity, check us out on the web at caper.pararesearch.org.
Do you need a website? Get WebGuy. With over 10 years experience with website design, WebGuy knows how to make what you need. With expertise in all major programming techniques, WebGuy can get your site up and running in no time. Need custom graphics? No problem. Chat rooms, bulletin boards, interactive calendars, streaming audio and video? WebGuy does it all. For your website design needs, email webguy@gemwebdesigns.com. Once again, that is webguy@gemwebdesigns.com.
Activity has been around for many years. Recently, since the new millennium, it seems it has been on the rise. We at Tri-State Paranormal are here to help people with their fears and their concerns. We don't charge for our services. If you feel like you have some strange activity going on in your home, please give us a call or go to our website at www.tspnorthernkentucky.com. We're here to help you.
Hi, this is James Willis, co-author of Weird Ohio and founder and director of The Ghosts of Ohio, and you are listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk. Enjoy.
And we're back.
Yes, we are okay. Certainly back.
I never know if we're back for sure or not. It's just after the one drop, but sometimes you go crazy with the drops and then I'm wrong and we're not really back.
I'm still kind of infatuated with this thing that Nick said where there were these urban myths and everybody kept coming to the place believing in these urban myths, and then eventually, even though the historic thing behind them never actually happened, everybody believing it actually made it happen. And that's really interesting. I really like that idea.
I fully believe that you can convince yourself there is a ghost and make it happen. I believe that can happen.
Then what is a ghost? Is it? It's always been, I guess, implied to me that a ghost is the spirit of someone who's passed on. And what if everything's like this, where a place is creepy, and everybody thinks it's creepy, so eventually something creepy actually starts to happen there? Or you do something so often, the same way. Like, say my theory about a guy going down the stairs and every morning the same time, going out the door and whatever. And then instead of dying, he just moves somewhere else. Could the door still open because for the same reason? Not necessarily because he's dead and he's doing it again, but because there's this some sort of psychic impression that's been placed on the world at that point where this happens. Not necessarily that someone's died, but that...
I believe that's completely possible, and I don't think it's so much what is a ghost. I think a ghost is the spirit of someone that died. But what you're referring to, I would just call more so paranormal activity, because it's paranormal activity in the sense of it's just abnormal. It's not, as the definition says, it's not of the norm. But I wouldn't so much call that a ghost, because to me, a ghost is a spirit. I think, like, by definition, a ghost is a spirit.
Well, but you know that if we were in a house and a door opened up by itself, we would think ghost. We wouldn't think, oh, that's just paranormal activity.
Yeah.
So...
we're not in that situation right now, so... can actually think about it logically.
But you're just taking these terms and putting them to different definitions, and I'm just wondering as a whole... do we know that this is because somebody died there? These ghosts that people are experiencing?
No. We don't really know anything. As far as I'm concerned, everything's speculation. Everything is theory.
At the same time, there are those intelligent haunts out there, which would completely go against what I've been saying, though.
All right. But I don't think we ever really know the answer. And if there are spirits of human beings, if they're energy, we don't know. And I think it'll be a long time before we do know.
Like 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
No, like 50, 60, 100, 200 years. Yeah. Like really long, 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 long time.
So I
think at that point it'll be a scientifically proven field. By the time we figure out exactly what they are, it'll be a scientifically proven field. It'll be as real as heart surgery. I don't know. I have no
analogy there. After all that thought, all you could come up with was heart surgery?
Yeah. I think if we ever figure all that out, we'll have all the answers. It'll be proven science. No need to study it anymore.
So in the paranormal history question that I had, did you happen to notice if anybody actually knew the answer? Because I'm actually kind of curious now that I asked it.
I don't know if it was the right answer, but people made their guesses.
Guesses?
And I don't remember any of them.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll have to look that up on my own. This day in history, though, two famous movie stars married in 1920. Anybody know who those are?
I do not. I could look it up, but that ruins the fun.
I'm not even sure that I've heard of one of them.
I'm not sure I know off the top of my head any actors that would have gotten married in 1920.
Well, it's Douglas Fairbanks and Mary Pickford.
Yeah, I never would have guessed this.
Before my time. Before my time.
Never, ever would have guessed this.
And we do have another new outro today.
Wait. Chris Fleming was the most popular guess, and they all think it's the right answer for the paranormal question.
How did he come up with the... the idea for it? Like,
I don't know that. I don't think they said that.
Get Chris Fleming as the guest next week.
I'll work on that. I've heard it's hard to get him as a guest.
But wouldn't that be neat? Wouldn't that be neat if the answer to the question happened to be the guest on next week's show?
It would be.
So Mike is going to work his hardest to get... Or who's our guest next week?
It's still in the works.
Exactly. So Chris Fleming. Chris Fleming is our guest next week, unless Mike can't get him. So tune in and we will hear the story of the first time somebody decided to use a K2 or an EMF meter to search for ghosts.
I'll do my best. I've heard other hosts say that they tried to get him on and they couldn't do it, so I'm not sure what kind of luck I will have.
Offer him a free commercial. He can have a free commercial.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll bring him over.
Okay. Did you have anything else? You done? I'm done if you're done.
Go check out our website at MiamiTownGhostTours.com.
Are we a different night next week?
Oh, yeah.
We should probably mention that, shouldn't we?
Next week we are Tuesday night. And next week there will only be one studio. So next week we are Tuesday night in that one studio at 10 o'clock, same time. So don't come back Monday night, or you can come back for the other shows. But if you're looking for us, come back Tuesday night at 10 o'clock.
Tuesday night at 10 o'clock. And we're not just talking, if you phase this out, you gotta come back. You gotta snap back to listening to us. I know we get boring here at the end, but you gotta come back and realize that Monday night, we're not gonna be here. You gotta come on Tuesday night at 10 o'clock in order to see us.
They wouldn't see us, they would just hear us. Okay, sorry, that was a bad joke. So we have a new outro, I hear.
Yes, we have a new outro. Web Guy did this, and he actually found somebody who sounded a lot like me to do the voiceover. is what he says. So we'll have to listen to see. You done? You got anything else?
I'm done. I have nothing else. Thanks, guys, for listening.
And you've been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Good night, everybody.
Give me one second. I don't remember which one was the... We'll go with this one. You've been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Have a good night, everybody.
Been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Tune in next week for the best radio show that you have ever heard.